Welcome to a new episode from English Plus Podcast. I'm your host, Danny, and today we have another digest coming your way. And as usual, we have a lot to cover in today's digest. Let me tell you about what we're going to cover today. We're going to talk about the proverb, ask and you shall receive. We're going to talk about a very special quote by Indira Gandhi. And then we're going to talk about some words and expressions. You can't judge a book by its cover. What does that mean? When do we use it? And what about the word extol? And then we're going to move on to some interesting information. You might have heard of saffron as a spice, but do you know that this spice is worth more than gold? And in Know Yourself, we're going to talk about the anchoring effect and how it tricks your brain. And in our language section, we're going to talk about the word hope. And we're going to talk about some common mistakes we make when we use the word between. Before we finish, we have my favorite section of the episode, and this is the literary echo section, where we're going to talk about one very special poem by Maya Angelou. And we're going to finish with a question in our spotlight. Can a society survive on truth alone? And again, today we have a question in the Q&A section. So there's a lot to cover, my friends. Let's not waste any more time. Now, without further ado, let's dive right into today's digest. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever wished something would just fall into your lap? A promotion, a dream partner, the winning lottery numbers? What if there was a simple secret, an unlocked door to all those hopes and aspirations? What if the key to getting what you wanted in life was as simple as asking? We've all heard the phrase, ask and you shall receive. But is it really that straightforward? Can asking truly transform our lives? Welcome to Daily Proverbs, my friends, where we dig into the wisdom hidden in every sayings. And today we're exploring the power hidden within the tantalizing promise, ask and you shall receive. Now, at first glance, this proverb seems incredibly optimistic. After all, shouldn't we just get what we desire if we simply put the request out into the universe? Well, unfortunately, life's not usually that easy. But that doesn't mean there's no power in asking. Let's unpack this proverb layer by layer. Firstly, there's the act of identifying what you want. Many times, we flounder through life feeling dissatisfied, but unsure exactly what would make things better. The courage to ask forces you to pinpoint your desires. Suddenly, you have direction. Secondly, the proverb talks about the courage to voice your needs. Think about it. Asking makes you vulnerable. You're opening yourself up to the possibility of rejection, of hearing a no. Yet, in overcoming that fear of disappointment, you gain personal power. And thirdly, asking means putting yourself out there. You're announcing to the universe, hey, I'm here, and I want this. This act of claiming your desires, even verbally, opens pathways you might not have seen otherwise. Opportunities can start aligning themselves. People become more aware of your goals and might even wish to assist you. Now, of course, there are nuances to this proverb. It's not a magical wish-granting machine. Blindly asking for selfish things with no effort of your own likely won't yield any results. Think of it as teamwork with the universe. You put out the signal. The universe helps provide opportunities, but it's up to you to seize them. Maybe you're asking for a better job. This proverb doesn't mean the perfect offer will drop into your inbox. It does mean you might become aware of a relevant networking event or have the confidence to approach someone who can help. The receiving part can take many forms. Ask and you shall receive, my friends, reminds us that life isn't purely passive. We are co-creators of our own experiences, so let me leave you with a question to reflect on. What's one thing you've wanted for a long time but been too afraid to ask for? Could today be the day you start the process of making it happen? Well, think about it. And I know some of you might say that you're just putting a lot of philosophy into a very simple saying that some people might even relate with religious context. But I'm not talking about religion. I'm not talking about any kind of beliefs here. I'm just talking about a very simple thing that we can learn from this proverb. And maybe, just maybe, the most important thing we can learn from this proverb is to pinpoint what we really want in this life. So my friends, that was the proverb for today, but we're not done. Next, we're going to move on to our quote. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Imagine attempting a friendly handshake only to find the other person's fist clenched tight. Not exactly a recipe for connection, is it? Now imagine approaching life that way, defensive, closed off, unwilling to compromise. Could that be holding you back from opportunity, growth, and collaboration? The insightful words of Indira Gandhi, the first female Prime Minister of India, ring through time. You cannot shake hands with a clenched fist. This simple statement holds incredible depth. Welcome to our quote of the day, my friends, where we explore the hidden meanings within impactful words. And today, we're diving into the repercussions of that clenched fist mentality. Indira Gandhi wasn't just talking about literal handshakes. This quote extends into a powerful metaphor about approaching the world. So let's break it down. First, we have rigidity. A clenched fist suggests inflexibility, an unwillingness to see different perspectives. Life often demands negotiation and compromise. Do you find it hard to budge on your views, making cooperation tough? And there's defensiveness that we should think about. A clenched fist speaks of a guarded mentality, as if constantly prepared for attack. Always expecting confrontation can taint our interactions, making others hesitant to approach. Could this be pushing away potential friendships or collaborations? Well, think about that. And of course, there's the missed opportunities. Think of all the possibilities symbolized by that outstretched, open hand. A handshake signifies agreement, collaboration, welcome. A clenched fist? Not so much. Could your closed-off attitude be causing you to miss out on amazing things? Well, Indira Gandhi wasn't advocating weakness or blind trust. She knew the complexities of diplomacy. But inherent in that quote is a call for openness. It's the notion that being receptive to viewpoints different than our own isn't a sign of defeat, but of strength. It allows for dialogue, problem solving, and the potential to forge something new and better together. Imagine if world leaders approached negotiations with clenched fists. Not a whole lot would get resolved, would it? This principle applies just as readily in our daily lives, with loved ones, co-workers, even strangers we encounter. An open-handed approach doesn't imply naivete, but a willingness to start from a place of possibility. So here's a challenge for you, my friends. Where in your life might you be unknowingly holding a clenched fist? Is there a relationship strained by stubbornness? Are you missing out on an opportunity due to fear of rejection or a belief that you already know the best way? Indira Gandhi's wisdom reminds us that some of the greatest possibilities in life might just require that small act of unclenching our fists and reaching out with open hands. So, thank you, my friends, for pondering this quote with me today. Don't forget that we still have more in this episode and come back in other digests where we talk about other quotes just as impactful as this one. Next, we're going to move on to our next section where we're going to talk about expressions and words, word power. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever picked up a book because the cover looked amazing, only to be bored to tears by the story inside? Or maybe you passed over a book with a plain design, only to later discover a world of adventure hidden within its pages? Have you fallen into the trap of judging people too quickly based on appearances? Welcome to English Express, my friends, where we uncover the hidden meanings and stories behind those everyday English phrases you use. Today, we're diving into a classic reminder. You can't judge a book by its cover. Is this wide old saying true? Or can we sometimes accurately guess a book's content by its cover art? Does it apply to people as well? Now, let's start with the literal meaning. Publishers put tremendous effort into designing book covers that will entice readers. They want something eye-catching, something that hints at the genre or the mood of the story. However, those covers can sometimes be misleading. Maybe a thrilling cover hides a slow-paced plot. Or maybe a whimsical cover design disguises a story full of heartbreak. The core message of this expression is about not jumping to conclusions. It's a warning against snap judgments based on surface appearances. And this applies beautifully to people too. Think of all the times you prejudged someone based on how they looked. Perhaps you assumed someone with tattoos and piercings wouldn't be friendly, only to find out they're a total sweetheart. Or maybe that person dressed in a fancy suit turned out to be a real snob. It's so easy to build a story about a person based on their cover, isn't it? Now, does this mean we should always ignore first impressions entirely? Well, not necessarily. Now, sometimes those initial vibes we pick up about a person or situation can be accurate. There's a balance. This expression cautions against relying solely on appearance, encouraging us to dig deeper before forming solid opinions. So, you can't judge a book by its cover is a timeless piece of wisdom because it's a reminder to remain curious, to give both books and people a chance to reveal their true character. So next time you see someone who intrigues or even confuses you, try to withhold judgment. You might miss out on an incredible friendship, a life-changing experience, or simply a really, really great book with a terrible, terrible cover. So think about it. Have you ever been surprised by a book with a less than appealing cover? I'd love to hear your story. So if you'd like to share what you think with me, of course, I would love to hear what you think. So that was our expression for today, my friends. Now we'll move on to our word for today, extol. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever been so impressed by someone or something that regular compliments just didn't cut it? You needed a word with power, a verbal fireworks display worthy of that occasion. Have you ever felt like the words good job weren't even close to describing a truly amazing accomplishment? Well, today we're uncovering a hidden gem of the English language that's perfect for those moments. Welcome to Word of the Day, where we delve into the delightful quirks and hidden powers of individual words. And today's word is a bit of a showstopper. Extol. Extol means to praise enthusiastically and lavishly. Think of it as cranking up the volume on your usual compliments. It's not just saying something is good, it's proclaiming its greatness to the world. Picture this. Your friend just ran their first marathon. Sure, you could say nice work. Or you could extol their dedication and perseverance. Imagine a talented artist whose work leaves you breathless. You wouldn't merely like their art. You'd extol their genius and vision. So where does that word come from, you might wonder? Now, turns out it has Latin roots meaning to lift or elevate. That's exactly what you're doing when you extol someone, raising them up with your words. Now here's a fun fact. You'll find the word extol quite a bit in religious texts used to describe the praise of deities. It makes sense as this is a word reserved for the highest level of admiration. Now here's the thing. You don't want to overuse this word. Extol is best saved for truly exceptional situations. If you use it all the time, it loses its impact, just like shouting all the time loses its effectiveness. So here's your challenge. This week, keep an eye for a moment worthy of the word extol. Maybe it's a colleague who goes above and beyond, a child who shows incredible kindness, or even a piece of art that moves you deeply. When that moment comes, don't hold back. Unleash those verbal fireworks. And hey, if you get really good at wielding words like extol, who knows? Maybe someone will start extolling your skills. Now, thanks for nerding out about words with me on Word of the Day. And don't forget to come back for other digests and other words. But don't leave just yet, because we still have a lot to cover in today's episode. Now, before we move on to our Did You Know section, we have our question for today, our Q&A section, which I'm loving very much. This time, the question is from Liam Patel from London, England. That's what I'm going to answer next, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. So, my friends, welcome back to English Plus Podcast and today's digest. And in our Q&A section for today, before we start, of course, I will have to remind you that you can ask your questions too, and I can include them in upcoming episodes. All you have to do is send me your question to the dedicated email for this, ask@englishpluspodcast.com. It's not that difficult. Just ask at EnglishPlusPodcast.com. Remember, we just talked about it. Ask and you shall receive, right? So here, ask and I will answer. And of course, if you include some information about yourself, that would be lovely because I will introduce you first and then I will share your question and of course, try to answer it to the best of my abilities. So today's question is from Liam Patel from London, England. Liam is a linguistics student at university. He's fascinated by how language changes and he loves exploring the origins of quirky English expressions. So maybe that's the reason why he sticks around. I mean, we just talked about some quirky expressions in our word power section. But Liam's question is not about language at all. Liam asked me, do you use artificial intelligence in creating content for the podcast? And that's a very good question. Because, you know, some people are vilified for using AI. Some people consider it cheating. There are a lot of perspectives here. But of course, I'm not going to discuss that. Maybe I will discuss that in a separate episode, but I'm going to answer the question as directly as possible. Do I use artificial intelligence in creating content for the podcast? Of course I do. And not only for the podcast, for the website as well. But maybe the real question is how do I use artificial intelligence for the podcast and for the website? Now, artificial intelligence makes it very easy for me to organize text, to format text. Now, because sometimes when I write something, I just write the first draft and the first draft is not that neat. And when you want to put it on the website, there are a lot of things that you need to take care of. The headings are very important in posts on the website. The format of those headings in HTML. Now, of course, for those of you who know about creating websites, you don't need to write HTML anymore because content management systems like WordPress usually does that for you. But if you intentionally put specific things, that will help your search engine optimization, which is something that will help you appear on Google search. And when it comes to this, artificial intelligence is very, very helpful. Now, before artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, Gemini, and others, I used to do that on my own, and it would be just like this time-consuming thing that's not creative. It's just like formatting a text. And now, it can format it for me. And I will have to add, very fast, very efficiently, and for free. So I can't complain. I use the artificial intelligence for research when I want to research a topic. I still do the old-fashioned research when I just search for a topic and go online, visit different websites and just gather data. Of course, I do that. But with artificial intelligence, it's even easier because you just have a conversation. It's like you're having a conversation with an encyclopedia. Now, of course, you have to be careful because sometimes the answers are not perfect. I'm talking about facts and stuff. Sometimes the facts can be wrong. But when you research something, you usually double check and you just see different resources and stuff. So it's part of the process when you double check your facts, but definitely it's a big help. But maybe the biggest benefit for me is AI images. I mean, I use that all the time. I ask artificial intelligence to create images. I do that on ChatGPT and Leonardo, and the results are just amazing. Now, before that, I used to search in stock images for ages sometimes to find an image that kind of represents the idea that I want to convey, but it's very, very difficult. Now, it's easy when you want to talk about things that are related to business or to talk about objects and stuff, but when you start talking about ideas or expressions, for example, just like the word extol, I mean, trying to search for a stock image photo to put it as a featured image that would represent extol is definitely a pain. With artificial intelligence, it's a lot easier. Now, of course, it's not a straightforward thing. You still need to describe what you want, and the more details you include in your description, the better results you will get. But I like this. I really like this because I'm sure that some of the results I get, I can't find anywhere else. So to get back to Liam's question, do I use artificial intelligence? Definitely. Now I'm excited about AI videos. Because that's also another area where I kind of struggle sometimes when I want to find B-rolls to put in the videos. Now, I will have to stop here because, of course, we still have a lot to cover in this episode. But again, Liam, thank you very much for your question. And, of course, one more thing. I use AI for proofreading. It's very, very good for proofreading. Because back in the day, I used to do it on my own. And sometimes I wouldn't pick up on some of the mistakes I made. Just because the same eyes are going through them, sometimes I would give them to someone, and that would not be the cheapest choice, to be honest. It's very expensive to give your work to other people to proofread. So now with AI, it's convenient. Guys, I promise, I will stop this time. I will stop here. And definitely, we should have an episode just to talk about AI and how it is used. And I understand that we should address the elephant in the room, how to use it ethically. Well, we'll talk about that, definitely, because it's an interesting topic. But in the meantime, if you have any opinions, please share them with me and we can discuss that. I would love to learn what you think about that. But now, we still have the rest of today's digest, so we're going to move on. And it's our Did You Know section. Next, we're going to talk about Saffron. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Now imagine a pinch of something so precious, it costs more per ounce than actual gold. Would you believe that something exists right in your spice cabinet? Well, maybe you don't have it in your spice cabinet, but let's imagine it is there, or it can be there. Now get ready to have your mind blown, my friends, because today we're uncovering a culinary treasure with a shocking price tag. Welcome to Did You Know, where we explore quirky facts and hidden wonders about the world around us. And brace yourselves, because today we're diving into the world of saffron. Now picture this, a gorgeous purple flower. Seems unremarkable enough, right? Now, here's where things get wild. Inside that flower are three tiny thread-like stigmas. And these are the sources of saffron spice. But here's the kicker. It takes a whopping 75,000 of those flowers to create just 1 pound of saffron. Now, let's break this down. Imagine a football field-sized flower garden. The entire field yields a measly pound of spice. Plus, those delicate flowers must be harvested by hand. It's incredibly labor-intensive, with workers carefully plucking those precious stigmas before the flowers fully open to preserve the color and flavor. So what justifies that insane price tag? Saffron boasts an incredible aroma, a subtly sweet yet mysterious flavor, and it adds a vibrant golden hue to dishes. Ancient cultures used it for everything from perfume and dye to medicine. Today, it shines in iconic dishes like Spanish paella, Iranian jeweled rice, and even French bouillabaisse. Now, that tiny jar of saffron you might have at home suddenly seems a whole lot more impressive, doesn't it? So next time you add a pinch to your recipe, think about the journey those threads have taken. From that massive fields of flowers to the meticulous hand harvesting to your kitchen. It's a true testament to the power of nature and the dedication of farmers. Now, word of caution though, with such a high price tag, beware of fake saffron out there. Look for high quality, deep red threads, and remember, a little goes a long way. So my friends, that was about Did You Know. Next, we're gonna move on a little deeper. We're going to move inside. Know Yourself is coming next, don't go anywhere, I'll be right back. Have you ever walked into a negotiation feeling confident, only to have the other person throw out a number that completely derails your strategy? Have you impulsively bought something because the sale price seemed amazing, even if you didn't truly need the item? What if I told you there's a hidden psychological trick at play in these situations, influencing your decisions way more than you might realize? Welcome to Know Yourself, my friends, the podcast dedicated to unraveling those quirky behaviors and invisible forces that shape our choices. Today, we're getting under the skin of a sneaky cognitive bias called the anchoring effect. And by the way, before I move on and talk about the anchoring bias in this episode, yesterday I released a premium episode, it's called Cognitive Biases, in which I talk about 20 of the most common and most important biases that have a lot of influence on our lives and our decisions. So if you haven't listened to it yet, what are you waiting for? Just go and listen to it. Now, of course, I will have to say that this is a premium episode, so it's available to my premium members on Patreon. And if you want an easy listening experience, of course, you can subscribe directly from Apple Podcasts. Now, with that being said, let's continue. We're talking about the anchoring bias, one of the many cognitive biases out there. Now, first, let's define it. The anchoring effect describes our tendency to over-rely on the first piece of information offered to us when making a decision. That initial information, the anchor, taints everything that comes after it, often unfairly. Let me give you an example. Imagine buying a used car. You see a price tag of $10,000. Now, even if later negotiations drive that cost down, that initial $10,000 still looms large in your mind, skewing your perception of the car's true worth. So the original $10,000 might just be overpriced. but it is your anchor, and you start measuring any other price based on this anchor. Now, how about this? You're applying for a job. The recruiter mentions a potential salary range early in the interview. Now, even with further discussions, the first number sticks and influences your own expectations, right? Well, this bias isn't just about numbers. Think of a doctor diagnosing a patient. If their first impression is a certain illness, they may downplay later symptoms that don't fit the mold. They're too anchored on that initial guess. Now, of course, here there's also the confirmation bias at play, but we're talking about the anchoring bias, so let's stick to that. And now that we've learned what the anchoring bias is, how do we combat this? Well, awareness is key. When you receive that first piece of info, pause. Question whether it's truly reliable and seek out other perspectives. It's tough, as this bias is deeply wired into our brains, but actively fighting it gives you more decision-making power. Now, the anchoring effect reminds us that our minds don't always operate on pure logic. Now, here's something for you to think about. Where else in your life might the anchoring effect be influencing your choices? Are you clinging too tightly to first impressions of people? Or limiting your potential because of an early setback? Breaking free of mental biases, my friends, is a lifelong journey of self-discovery. And I'm very happy to point you in that direction. Thank you very much for joining me on Know Yourself. The next time, we're going to take another peek behind the curtain of your own amazing brain. But for now, we're done with the Did You Know section. We're moving on, and we're going to talk about language next. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever tossed out the phrase, "I hope so," without much thought? Or maybe said, "I hope I pass the test," with a mix of optimism and fear? Have you ever clung to hope during a difficult time? Seems like a simple word, and yet, there's so much power hidden within it. Welcome to English Usage, my friends, where we dig into the subtle ways we wield language, often without even realizing it. Today, we're taking a deep dive into the word hope, and it's way more complex than you think. Now, let's break down the different ways we use hope. We can use it to describe simple desire. Well, this is the most common use. I hope it doesn't rain today. It's a wish for the future, but often without the belief that it's truly likely. This is where it gets different from simply saying, "I wish it wouldn't rain." We can use it also for confident expectation. Well, this one has a bit more oomph. Think, "I hope my team wins." Here, you probably do believe there's a decent chance of your wish coming true. And we can use hope for possibility in the past. Did you take a test? Before you know the results, you might say, "I hope I passed." Notice you're using hope for something already done, yet to be determined. And you can use it as well for desperate clinging. Well, this is the heart-wrenching, but also powerful side of hope. "I hope my loved one recovers." Now, it's not just a wish, it's holding on to the slimmest chance, fueling strength in a dark time. So how layered this word is? That's why we use it in so many ways. It's not just wishful thinking, it can also express optimism, determination, and a way to cope during hardship. So here's your challenge. Pay attention to how you use the word hope this week. Is it a casual throwaway, a confident wish, or a deep, sustaining force in your life? The way we use words reflects so much about our thoughts and feelings. So thank you very much, my friends, for exploring the complexities of language with me on today's Digest. Tune in next time as we tackle another deceptively simple word. But now, we have some problems that we need to fix when we use the word between. That's coming next. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever hesitated when trying to figure out if you should use between or among? Are you secretly unsure whether that sentence you just wrote actually makes sense? If you've ever felt a little lost in the world of prepositions, you're definitely not alone. Even native speakers trip up on these little words sometimes. Welcome to Common Mistakes, where we unravel those sneaky language errors and help you speak with clarity and confidence. Today we're tackling the pesky preposition between. Okay, let's get right into it. One classic mistake is using between when there are more than two things involved. For example, you might hear someone say, "I have to choose between chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry ice cream." While we often use it in this way in casual conversation, technically, that's incorrect. Why? Because between implies a direct relationship between two specific things. When you have three or more choices, the word you want is among. So the correct sentence would be, I have to choose among chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry ice cream. But wait, it gets trickier. Here's where things get blurry. You can use between correctly with multiple things if they're considered individual units. For example, our company will select a winner between the New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles branches. See the difference? We're talking distinct groups, not a jumble of many options. I know, it's a pain, right? But my friends, that's what it is. And that's why many people make mistakes in them and why it's a common mistake. My point is, don't feel bad when you make this mistake, but try to double check if you're using the word correctly or not. I know, the difference between and among is subtle, yet important for polished speaking and writing. So here's a quick recap. Between is for two, among is for more. Now, take a moment and think about how you've been using these words. Have you been falling into that between trap for multiple items? From now on, try substituting among and see if it fits better. Thank you very much, my friends. And now that we're done with our language section, we have the literary echo section, my favorite, and we're going to talk about a beautiful poem next. So don't go anywhere. Just stick around. I'll be right back. Have you ever felt pushed down, overlooked, or underestimated? Have the bitter words of others ever threatened to break your spirit? Well, today we're immersing ourselves in a poem that speaks directly to that experience. A poem that proclaims defiance in the face of oppression and celebrates the resilience of the human heart. Welcome to Poem of the Day from English Plus Podcast, where we explore not just the words on the page, but the emotions they spark within us. And today, we're turning our spotlight onto Maya Angelou's iconic work, And Still I Rise. Now, let's begin with some context. Maya Angelou knew hardship firsthand. As a black woman in a racially divided America, she faced prejudice, discrimination, and even violence. Yet this poem isn't just about her personal struggle. It's a battle cry for all those who've been told they're not enough. Angelou's poem is a study in contrasts. It's both fierce and graceful, vulnerable and defiant. She confronts the reader with her history of pain, asking, "Does my sassiness upset you?" This isn't about appeasing anyone. It's about daring to take up space in a world that might prefer her small and invisible. Now, one of the poem's most powerful images is its repeated title line, "I Rise." It's a defiant act repeated across different circumstances, reminding us that even when we are knocked down, we have the strength to stand again. Now, Angelou takes her message even further, ending with the declaration that she brings with her the gifts that my ancestors gave. I am the dream and the hope of the slave. Now, here it's not just about personal victory, but honoring the legacy of those who survived so that she could thrive. Now, let me share the poem with you, and then I will leave you with a question to ponder. Still I Rise by Maya Angelou.
You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Just because I walk as if I have oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns with the certainty of tides. Just like hope springing high, still I rise. Did you want to see me broken, bowed head and lowered eyes? Shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries. Does my sassiness upset you? Don't take it so hard just because I laugh, as if I have gold mines digging in my own backyard. You can shoot me with your words. You can cut me with your lies. You can kill me with your hatefulness. But just like life, I rise. Does my sexiness offend you? Oh. Does it come as a surprise that I dance? As if I have diamonds at the meeting of my thighs. Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past rooted in pain, I rise. a black ocean leaping and wide, welling and swelling and bearing in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise into a daybreak miraculously clear. I rise, bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave. I am the hope and the dream of the slave. And so, wow. There I go.
Well, what a wonderful poem. I can't say that enough. But anyway, let's wrap things up with a question. And Still I Rise by Maya Angelou is a celebration of overcoming adversity. But what does it mean to us on an individual level? What challenges in your life call for this fighting spirit? Maybe it's a toxic relationship, a dream you've been told is impossible, or the cruel voices of self-doubt. Angelou's poem teaches us that rising isn't just about survival. It's about embracing your worth, your potential, and refusing to be defined by anything less. So think about that. And before I move on to our spotlight for today and our final segment for today, of course, I want to reiterate the importance of poetry. Not because I love it so much, not because I write poetry myself, but words really matter. Because words are emotions. And the moment that our emotions are not moved by any words or anything, actually, we turn into robots. We turn into lifeless beings, even if we're still alive. So my friends, just indulge me and think about those poems, even if you don't like poetry. In our poetry segment, I'm trying to choose things that are appealing to you and that are relevant. So just try to read the poem a couple of times and it will get to you. But anyway, that was about today's poem, and we still have our spotlight for today. That's the last segment for today's episode, so you don't want to miss that. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Now imagine a world without those comforting little white lies. A world where your friend tells you bluntly that yes, that dress does make you look a bit wide. Or a world where politicians couldn't sugarcoat their promises. Would such radical honesty create a better society, or would the whole thing crumble into chaos? Welcome to our spotlight, my friends, where we dissect those big philosophical questions that keep you up at night. And today we're diving headfirst into the messy relationship between lies and society. Are lies a necessary evil, or the poison that ultimately destroys us? Now let's start by acknowledging that lies come in many forms. There are those self-serving lies, the kind designed to manipulate and exploit others for personal gain. It's easy to condemn these. But then we have the pro-social lies, or fibs told to spare someone's feelings, maintain social harmony, even protect others. Is it cruel to be brutally honest all the time? Many philosophers would argue that a tiny bit of social lubrication is vital. Think about it. How would job interviews, first dates, or even family gatherings function if we couldn't bend the truth to avoid constant conflict? And what about diplomacy? Would diplomacy even exist? But that being said, here's where it gets really thorny. Once we accept a little dishonesty, where's the line? Does blurring the truth about small things pave the way for the truly harmful, self-serving deceptions? Can a society built on a foundation of half-truths even call itself honest? Throughout history, thinkers have debated this very issue. Some believe absolute truthfulness is paramount, a societal pillar. Others see dishonesty as an inevitable, even sometimes beneficial part of the human experience. We tell stories, mythologize, and spin narratives to make sense of the world. Is that truly so different from the little lies we tell each other to get by? Now, sadly, I won't offer you an easy answer today. Because as usual, I'm waiting for an answer from you, and I'm waiting for you to share your answer with me so that we can discuss it even further. Now, the question of lies, large and small, isn't about a simple right and wrong, my friends. It's about the constant tension between an ideal and messy reality. So I leave you with this. Consider the lies you've told today, big or small. Were they for the supposed benefit of another or yourself? And in an ideal world, what role would truth and falsehood play? Food for thought as you navigate the blurry lines of everyday life. Thank you very much, my friends, for pondering this spotlight with me. Don't forget that we still have a lot of spotlights to come in the upcoming Digest episodes. But as you can see, I'm releasing 3 Digest episodes every week and 3 premium episodes. Yesterday was the very first premium episode on cognitive biases. Now you can listen to the introduction of the episode to know what the episode is about for free. But if you want to listen to the whole thing, you need to be a premium member on Patreon, or you can subscribe directly on Apple Podcasts. With that being said, my friends, that'll be everything I want to share with you for today. Thank you very much for joining me on another English Plus Podcast episode. This is your host, Danny, signing off. Thank you very much for listening. I will see you next time.